What is going on, everyone? It's Justin here, and I'm back with another episode of the Featured Podcast. And today we have a very special guest who is one of the first creators that I watched on the platform, iJustine. She makes amazing videos about tech and Apple products specifically, and also does amazing travel videos as well, and is a creator that pretty much everyone knows in the tech space. With Apple's WWDC event that just wrapped up, we're going to go ahead and talk about that, as well as Apple's new changes and developments into the future from one of the most knowledgeable Apple reviewers on the platform. We are also going to talk about how YouTube has changed over the years, both from a creator and developmental standpoint, from the production side of things, and just like some of the things I remember back in the day from when I first started and when Justine first started, when the platform was first introduced. If you guys enjoy this podcast, make sure you drop a review over on Apple Podcasts. And without further ado, let's just go ahead and get started. But yeah, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. And as someone who started, I think my first YouTube video was 2010, 2011. So back then, you were already a big creator, and it kind of inspired me to start creating tech videos, the OG group of technology creators. Because growing up, I actually wasn't into tech at all. It wasn't until I was trying to buy my first Apple product that I started watching YouTube videos and learning more about it, and eventually got very interested in like the whole like video thing, and kind of just it went from there. So I know you're a huge Apple fan, so I think the first thing that is very fitting to talk about would be WWDC and kind of your impressions of it, what hardware you might have been expecting that we might have to wait a little bit longer for, and kind of the direction that Apple's going with both the software side of things and with their chipsets on the computers.
I mean, I enjoyed the WWDC, the presentation, so much more than their ones before. Like, it was just, I mean, they had some little cheesy moments, but I feel like that kind of humanized it a little bit more.
For sure.
Whereas I feel like trying to do that stuff live is very difficult. So to be able to kind of convey the message that they want to convey. And one of the biggest questions that I have, and I've seen everyone kind of debating this online, is were they shooting that live or were those virtual sets? What do you think?
I think it was a virtual set. I think one of the tweets that I put out during the event was when Craig was walking into the main hall, which usually for an event, it's pretty clean, but it was so clean. It was so perfect that it was sort of like a YouTuber setting up to film a video where everyone's like, Justin, you got such a clean desk. Whereas my mom is like, there's nowhere to walk in your place. It's just like stuff all over the place. So I feel like they either put it behind that like filming wall or something, but I feel like the production quality was much better than I expected. They could have just like stood on stage and did it as they usually would, but we saw Sony try that with the PS5, the initial developers conference. And I think what Apple did with this was, it was great. People in production were debating, like it was a shot on a Red, and they were using like some robot arms, and they also added some FPV drone footage and the transitions, which drew some inspiration from vlogging. It was perfect.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of us being there and kind of experiencing what WWDC is, or like Apple events, like you kind of get to, I don't know, you really feel what the vibe is like there. And I think they did such a good job of like making it inclusive. Like it's kind of the feeling that you would get if you were actually there, like the drone shots, everything. Like I was super impressed. Like I mean, I got a little emotional. I was like, this is really, it was so good, because it was like sad that we weren't all together. Yeah. But I think they did such a great job of it. And I think we were all expecting hardware, but I think because of how everything has changed, you know, a lot of hardware, I feel like there's been so many delays depending upon, you know, shipping and available, you know, products and stuff like that. So I feel like they might do just a separate event for that. And I mean, they really can do whatever they want.
For sure.
Which is crazy because the whole landscape has completely changed.
It was almost like, The way they had it set up actually had some people wanting them to do the next event virtual as well, which is rare because Apple events have always been known as like the big moment each year in the fall season. And right now we're in a bit of like the mid-year where not as many things are coming up. You have like the first few months where a lot of smartphones all over the place. It's like one phone every other week. And then you have like that kind of summer break, and then everybody's just looking forward to Apple to the September event. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people were kind of like, what if they do more of this in the future? Like, imagine if it was a hardware event, how great that would be if they went with the same presentation strategy as they did for this one.
Yeah, I think doing these types of things, it's amazing. And, you know, I will definitely miss kind of having those in-person events and stuff like that. But I feel like for me, and I'm sure for you and for all of the creators, it was so much less stressful. I was at home. I got the content. I was able to, you know, download the beta. I was able to just go and start creating. I mean, we shot so much stuff that day that, you know, when you're actually at the events, I don't think people understand, especially for YouTube creators, it's usually just such a small team that we're trying to get so much done so quickly. Yeah. So I was like, wow, we're all at home. We have all of our stuff. We can make more content and really kind of be more thorough.
Yeah, for sure. It was, we had the beta installed and everything. That kind of transitions into the next question, and that is, what do you think of the iOS direction and how it's tied together with the updates of iPadOS and also the macOS Big Sur, where some people might have mentioned that it was the icons are definitely a big change. And I think we saw in Marquez's interview with Craig this morning, Craig was mentioning that people are just used to a certain look and they might complain about it at first. And people like to jump onto the whole thing on Twitter whenever someone tweets out and says, this looks like that. But in a couple weeks or even a couple months, it just becomes the new norm and people will look at the old one and say, well, the new one looks much better.
For sure. And I think it's just, that's like human nature to criticize and to judge. And then yeah. You're like, all right, you were right. This looks great. I mean, I like the new icons and I think having everything kind of uniform, I mean, it really only makes sense. But my first initial reaction to seeing Big Sur, I was like, oh, this looks a lot like iOS. But then you could have said the same thing, like, you know, iOS back in the day might have been pulling things from macOS. So yeah. It's just, it's all the same ecosystem and all in the same family. So I think keeping it consistent across everything, I mean, it might get a little confusing because there have been times that I've been trying to touch my MacBook now and I'm like, no, stop it. Because it's just that intuitive nature that you start getting from using the iPad and the iPhone. It's also so interesting seeing kids today, like using things because they've grown up with like the iPhone.
Yeah.
And then they start like touching laptops or touching the TV and you're like, no, not everything is touch. So, you know, I think I'm interested to see Big Sur. I haven't installed it yet. That's my weekend project.
Yeah, it's, I think, so I've had a few days with iOS now, not on my main device, but I feel like it's actually become much more stable over the years. There was one year where I was probably in high school and I installed it on my main device and our family was going on a vacation to Europe and I had a beta one on my phone for the whole trip and there's like the Wi-Fi and everything. So I never installed on my main device after that, but it's actually been pretty stable and like the widgets and everything, I think the direction of it is pretty cool. One thing I also noticed is that they spent less time talking about iPadOS aside from a few refinements that they brought over from the iPhone side, but they also spent a lot of time talking about Big Sur and of course like the new processing direction of Apple creating their own chips and moving away from Intel. It's almost like they spent this year trying to unify that whole platform. They brought the Mac side into some reminiscence of iOS and like the clean interfaces, the rounded edges. Is that like Apple's future of having all of their products on the same chip lineup and being able to kind of just have a more unified experience than they've ever had before?
Yeah, he didn't say how long they're going to be making or supporting Intel, but of course they did say that the 2-year turnover. But then they also said they're still going to be making Intel Macs. So like, what do we think like that crossover is going to be like? What is the decision to use this or the decision to use that? But I think, you know, having them make all of the stuff in-house, obviously, you know, it's classic Apple move of tying everything together and being stuck in their ecosystem. But when it does just work and, you know, if this is going to help us with battery life or performance, like I'm here for it. Like, I think it's great.
And like from the professional aspect as well, like Final Cut Pro 10, I'm very excited to see what changes come to that, but also whether or not the Apple chip is going to be in that Pro line right away, like the 16-inch Macs, the Mac Pro, which has become like a very important part of the workflow. But I think it was what I kind of sensed from the event was that they kind of brought some of the iOS over to Mac. And then I know a lot of people have been mentioning like, oh, the iPad should have desktop related apps. And that I feel like is going to be something that if it does happen, is going to be more in the future once the whole Mac lineup is translated over to the Apple chips as well. But the fact that it's coming out before the end of this year, I think is very exciting. And it's a huge change. I mean, coming from Intel chips, which have been like the universal, like what it's been known for. I'm curious, but I'm also kind of not sure what it's going to be like to have a MacBook that has an Apple chip.
Yeah, I remember the crossover whenever they first went to the PowerPC to Intel. And I looked it up. I was like, how old? Like in my mind, it felt like I was 5 years old when this happened. I was like, oh, that was 2005. Okay, so it wasn't that long ago. Or was it 2005? Hold on a second. I forget what the date was. It was...
I think it was 2005. It was, the transition to Intel
I think it was, yeah. Because I remember, because it was like right before I'd started my YouTube channel. So yeah, I think it was June 2005. But it's just crazy because they've been with Intel for a really long time. Yeah. So I think it's something that is a good change and hopefully it works out.
Yeah, so I think now that we've talked a bit about like software and the direction of Apple, what is the product that you're most excited for this year? I know there's a lot of things that have been stacked now into the second half of the year. namely like the redesigned iMac, which is going to look amazing, and also the iPhone and that being a redesigned year as well. What are you personally most excited for?
I mean, obviously, like iPhone season, it's like what I live for. So I'm really excited for that. And it's also going to be interesting because even though, you know, this type of event was really great for virtual, the iPhone event for press people, I mean, that's the time that you get hands on. That's when you actually get to see the device and then, you know, be able to really make content around it. So I don't know what they're going to do for that because you're not going to be able to I guess you could have an event, a very socially distanced, strange event, having people like 6 to 10 feet away lining up. I'm not sure, but I'm definitely looking forward to the iPhone. And I'm actually using my iMac is what I use for all of my gaming and streaming setup,
really?
Which everyone's always criticizing me for, you know, playing games on a Mac, but I mean, go figure. So the redesigned iMac I am excited about because that kind of fits very well into sort of this gaming streaming setup that I have. And then I use the Mac Pro for all of the editing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've been jumping around setups over the years, and I imagine you have as well. Like in the past decade, if we look back at what the setups used to be, I think I did the MacBook for a little bit. That was like my first, computer, and then, ended up being like the Mac Mini, the Mac Pro, the black trash can one, and then It was the MacBooks for many years, and the MacBooks were really capable, but the thing was it was on my desktop like 90% of the time, so I felt like there was always more power that we'd be able to get in a setting where the computer wasn't really going anywhere. But I liked the ultra wide display, so I was conflicted on using an iMac, and then the Mac Pro came out, and then now we're switching over to the setup with that and everything. So it has changed a lot over the years, and personally I'm very excited for the iPhone. You usually line up for the iPhone, right?
I mean, I did. I mean, the longest my sister and I ever waited was over 50 hours. It was the iPhone 6. I had placed a pre-order, but for some reason, like, it didn't actually go through.
So I
didn't realize this.
Oh,
it was crazy. I mean, we slept on the street, like, for just almost 3 days.
You usually line up at the Santa Monica one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you probably had a much better experience than I did because it's nice and sunny down in California. I lined up in Vancouver for the iPhone 6, and it was a year where they started making the Gold 6 Plus.
And, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And Vancouver, with a large population being Asian, there's people who were lining up like a week and a half, 2 weeks in advance to be able to sell them at however much they were overseas. And so I went to Vancouver. I had a pre-order, but I didn't know when it was coming. So I was like, if I can miss one day of school to go line up, I sat outside for 27 hours and it was pouring rain entire time. But it was a mess too. It was actually, I think something happened at the front of the line and the police were here, and I was like sleeping in a sleeping bag, and everybody just like ran around, and what was originally a 100th spot in line ended up being, I think, 450th. So overall that experience was not the best, but it is cool to see how people over the years have really been loyal to Apple and their new lineups. And this year might be the only year where lineups might not be a thing. What do you usually do to like keep entertained for the 3 or 4 days? Or,
oh man, well, I mean, the past couple of years, thankfully, all the pre-orders have been very seamless, so I haven't really had to go wait outside. But I would still go down and visit just to say hi, like, "Hey guys, I miss you all." But what did we do? It was really hot, so I remember my sister, like, she got like heat stroke. She was like not doing very well, but she still stuck it out. And we had friends that came to visit, and we just had like these little tents that were like children's tents and just camped out. But usually it's just like talking to people in line. And I think that was like my favorite part about it is we were all there for one thing. Of course, there were some resellers, but most people, it was just like their love for Apple and their excitement. And it was just, it's so contagious. And I don't know, it's just, it's a really like fun event. It's kind of like going to a concert with no music, just you leave with an iPhone.
Yeah, that sounds like our experience was everybody was a reseller in line. I think we're the only ones trying to buy the stuff, and there'd be people driving by like yelling at us, telling us we're crazy or something at the mall.
We're like, we know, we get it.
Yeah, what is like your current like everyday carry or like daily driver setup? I know as tech reviewers, we test everything out, whether it's Apple in a lot of cases, other companies as well. It seems to be very widespread, and it's really easy to like one thing from one thing and the other, but it's hard to like pick like this is my main machine for everything, like whether it's a tablet, computer, laptop, desktop, camera. What is like your kind of everyday tech pack?
Well, it's crazy how much everything has changed because I used to travel like every other week. So I would never actually be home. So I would edit everything off of an external drive and my MacBook and like my iPhone. Like that was my to-go kit, like everything. But now I've been using my iPad so much more, just like around the house, just to do like emails and just, I don't know, just like consume content. It just drives me crazy that there's no Instagram app on the iPad. Like, just,
yeah,
this drives me crazy. Like, why don't you just make an app that works on the iPad? But I've been using the iPad so much more. And like now, I mean, I'm obviously editing a lot just on the Mac Pro. And then the iMac Pro is what I've been using for like my gaming and whole streaming setup. So it's weird just being at home and seeing everything kind of shift and change as to like what you use. I mean, I feel like you used to travel a lot as well too. So like, yeah, how has that kind of shifted for you?
So in my case, I was 22 last year. So I was thinking like, I'll just go on every single trip that I can go on. Usually I'll bring a friend to help video and photo and just like kind of enjoy that a little bit. But it did get to the point where I think it was almost 100 flights a year. And it's because I live on an island in Canada. So I got to take that 8-minute flight to get over to the main airport and then all that. And I always like had like flight delays, and it would either be like, we'd be in Switzerland 1 week, and then they would say, oh, you want to come to Japan the week after. And it was a lot of fun, but when it's all like one after another, it's hard to really appreciate it until we were at home for however many months. And now I felt like the past couple months, I've really been able to try to figure out the workflow and sort things out, and even switching to new software, like productivity software, such as Notion, starting to use Slack for the first time, which I never really used for, like same with notes, and trying to figure out how we can improve our editing and those kind of things. One thing I noticed that I started using much more is same as in your case, the iPad. I used to, so the problem before, or not really a problem, but it was when we were traveling, we would need a computer to do certain things, even if they weren't too complex. Like photo editing was just a little bit easier, in my opinion, on the computer. So we would have a 13-inch like MacBook Air or a smaller MacBook, a 16-inch for editing that would almost never travel. I tried to always edit at home. And because our trips were usually like 2-3 days, and then we'd come back just in case we have to go somewhere else. And the iPad was only, like an iPad Pro being used for Netflix is a bit ridiculous. But as a tech reviewer, you want to have the latest to be able to test apps and do that sort of stuff. But it wasn't until the release of the Magic Keyboard that I started using it as like an actual computer. And it's because muscle memory on the iMac and the MacBooks was all like registered that I couldn't really type well on the smart keyboard. So I feel like with the release of this keyboard, and I think it looks pretty cool, even standalone, it's turned it into something that I use every day. And I think what I like about it is that it lets you focus on one task a bit more. Whereas on a computer, you've got this 30 plus inch display and you have like 50 tabs open. You got your Final Cut, your email, things popping up all over. Whereas on the iPad, you have 1 to 2 things at a time.
No, and it's completely just so overwhelming, I feel like, when you're on the computer, because you really can be doing so many different things.
Yeah.
But what I was interested in when I first got the iPad is Apple was talking about all the things that you can do, which getting the iPad was my inspiration for starting a podcast, because that was one of their little things that they were like, you can start a podcast on the iPad. I was like, well, I have an iPad, I guess I'll start a podcast. So like we joke kind of recorded it. My sister and I both recorded into the iPad with, we have these Hype mics, which just have like, they go right into the USB-C port, and it just automatically recognizes it. And it has like different compression settings too. So you just like push a button and everything sounds perfect. So I was like, let's just make a podcast on the iPad. And we did. And then I was like, well, maybe, I wonder if I can actually edit a whole video if the iPad was all I have. And then I edited like a 14-15 minute vlog that I shot on my iPhone. And it was amazing because all of that footage that I shot on my iPhone automatically synced to iCloud. It was already on my iPad. And I just started editing. I was like, this is pretty great. And there's so many different things that they're making with the iPad that make it easy to transfer footage, like the NARBOX. Have you ever used that before?
I've heard about it. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So it's basically just a hard drive that you can either wirelessly connect or use USB-C to connect to it. And then you can just transport footage off of it, import it directly into LumaFusion. And editing on the iPad, I thought that they were going to announce Final Cut for iPad.
I did as well. I had a sense of it. I was like, are they going to announce it? But LumaFusion actually does work pretty well. And it has a lot of the same characteristics as iMovie and Final Cut. A lot of my film friends, when we do like collaborative projects, the pain is that they use Premiere, and I've never used Premiere. I grew up with an iMovie and Final Cut sort of thing. So it's like, I literally could not switch to Premiere if I had to. But LumaFusion actually worked quite well. You were able to color grade. We put like so many footage on there, and it was all able to handle it perfectly fine. But obviously with like, depending on the setup, the storage and everything starts to get a little bit more complicated with files and everything. But if it had to be done, it is 100% doable. And especially for like iPhone vloggers, airdropping it to your iPad and starting to edit right away is something that is unbeatable for the size.
It's so great. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. Like, will we be able to edit off of you know, like an external drive. I also have a Jellyfish server, which is really cool because you can also really connect that to your iPad. It's pretty awesome. I'm almost full, so I'm going to have to upgrade it. But you can connect that to your iPad as well and edit directly off of there. It's just like the future is going to be really interesting, especially I'm just so interested in like the kids right now, like the gear that they're getting. Like there's people that are only getting an iPad. Like that is their only device.
Yeah,
that's what they're learning to edit on. So they don't know anything other than I edit on LumaFusion now. So it's like their efficiency in that app would be, you know, us with Final Cut.
Yeah, it's like it's funny to see the generation of people nowadays. So I was born in 97.
Oh my God.
When the iPhone came out, when the iPhone came out, I was 10. And at the time, nobody was getting an iPhone at my age because it was just expensive. And then the first time I started seeing people have like phones was I think around grade 4. And then smartphones around like middle to high school. I was actually one of the last people in my grades to get a smartphone. My parents, Asian parents, they got me a little flip phone, hand me down. It could only call 3 numbers, didn't have texting or anything. So the iPod Touch was like my first like real device that was like the central hub. But then nowadays people are like, there's a phone now that is made by Apple that is $399. If my kid needs a first phone at age 10, maybe even younger. I don't know what the norm is nowadays. For $399, it's relatively foolproof for a phone that is outright. Because back then, if you dropped your iPhone, that thing's on a 3-year contract. At least in Canada, the 3-year contracts were very expensive. You'd be looking at like the thousands for a phone. And even with the flagships, it still is. So it's kind of, I think the moment, like the generation of applications where I felt a little bit old even for my age was trying to use TikTok for the first time. I literally had no idea how to navigate any of it. Because I was used to like Instagram, email, and when I was using TikTok, it was almost like my parents trying to use social media.
That was like me trying to figure out Twitch for the first time because
that looks
like
complicated.
I streamed
as well
on Justin TV, which was before Twitch was ever something. So
I remember
like 13
that
years ago.
The name
so
of
like
that.
My Yeah, like my Twitch account is older than half of the people watching some of the videos, which is crazy. So, but it was like, I did this so long ago and everything was so different, just logging back in. And I think what Twitch has done sort of as a community with all of their really cool features, like they have all these things where you can like gift subs to people. And it's just this whole other ecosystem that I just was not even aware of.
Yeah.
Because I was just, after streaming for so long before, I was like, I never want to do that again. But I think in quarantine, without traveling and being able to have like that connection with people, I feel like this is such a great alternative because a lot of these people aren't able to connect with people. So it's like we can actually have those conversations. So it's interesting to see where live is going. And even TikTok, I mean, it does feel like a generation thing, but this, I've had so much fun making TikToks, just being stupid and silly. Like it kind of takes you back to the original days of YouTube. Yeah, a lot less pressure.
Yeah.
But then of course, I think like anything, I start overthinking it. I'm like, okay, well, how can I make my TikToks better? I'm like, stop thinking, just have fun.
Yeah, how like everything's done on a phone. Whereas like coming from YouTube and stuff, we always want to overproduce, like, oh, I need a camera for that and this and that, color graded a little bit sort of thing. I'm a consumer of TikTok. I tried doing a few of them. It's just too many platforms to manage at this point. I even got rid of Snapchat and just started using Instagram stories. And I find that tying that all together is much more easier to manage aspect ratios and all that stuff, especially at a live event. Trying to do like Twitter at 16:9, Instagram at that, photo, video, this and that, cameras all over the place or running around. CES was that one. I think last year was one. We both did the Samsung TV. That
was
month
crazy.
That week was crazy. It was a lot of fun, but it was definitely a lot of running around and everything. But it's funny you mentioned
Oh, no, I was just asked, do you think you'll go to CES next year?
It depends. It's like a year by year basis. I know America's situation is much different than Canada. So chances are like based on right now, it's probably going to be a no. But the media I find in the US definitely drives the narrative of what's really going on. Like right now, coronavirus is, I'm seeing like peak number of cases in the US. Whereas in Canada, I don't really see any of the news anymore. As opposed to where it was like 2 or 3 months ago, where all it was coronavirus and everything. In Victoria, we haven't had a case, I think, in 6 weeks. So
that's amazing.
It's Canada's definitely done a better job, but Canada relies on the US a lot. So whatever we do here, we base on what's going on down there. So for now, the border's closed. Nobody's traveling or anything. So yeah, it's hard to say. I usually try to spend as little time on the show floor just because it's a lot of the stuff is just outside of it and you go where you need to. And other than that, we just want to like go hang out. Like that one year, I think just like went to go tour around and go drive some cars, go to a hockey game. You're a Penguins fan, right?
I mean, I feel like I used to be so much more into sports, but it just as the years went away, and I feel like I'm, if I were to choose a team, yes, the Penguins fan. Yeah. So
at least you guys have a couple Stanley Cups to celebrate.
We do, which is
still
good.
Are waiting for their first one. they almost did it in 2011, but I remember I was in grade 8 grad, and that was the first time anybody seen me cry because they lost in game 7 of the finals. So that was, people probably still remember that from that class. But like going back to the whole like YouTube, the old YouTube and like TikTok and all that, I want to talk about YouTube when you first started. Obviously it's really developed over the years. And even though I joined, I think maybe 4 or 5 years after YouTube existed, even like the whole business landscape and the ability to create a career out of it and all the opportunities that have come from it has changed so much in obviously the last 10 years, but especially in, I would say the last 5 to 6.
For sure.
What is like the biggest difference, that you see in the way it is today?
I feel like I don't have to explain myself as much anymore, because I feel like even in the beginning, probably when you started too, like you still had to explain what you were doing and validate it. but still, it's like even if you tell your friends and stuff too, you're like, oh yeah, I make YouTube videos. Like, I mean, I would get made fun of.
Yeah,
and then it's funny because those people that make fun of you come back later and they're like, hey, so I'm starting a YouTube channel. Can you give me some advice? I'm like, yeah, don't be mean to people at the beginning when
especially
they're doing
in school,
something
though.
Unique
yeah.
and innovative.
It was like
I bet.
Grade 8. I think I was in grade 8 when I first started. And I mean, I kind of was asking for it. I did the cinnamon challenge for fun.
Oh my gosh.
And the one video that gets circled around is that one. But I also remember being like math class, and my teacher was like, so I didn't really care what people thought back then. I would still make all these videos every single day. I think 300 in the first year on like an iPod, just unedited.
Oh my gosh.
But one time the math teacher was just like, so do you make any money off these YouTube videos? And it was still like grade 10, so nobody's making any money.
Yeah.
And somebody decided to answer for me. He's like, no, I don't really think so. There's both sides of it, but at the time, I think I'm glad that I didn't stop doing it. And now it's kind of just continued on, and nobody asks anything about it now. But yeah, the beginning phase, I know with YouTube, even now, like certain generations think it's not really a form of employment, even though it is like a media company, and we almost have to manage more different avenues than some small businesses where you have different staff members. Like up until last year, we were doing all the accounting, all the emailing and the business side. And most of my day was actually doing emails, which I actually don't mind doing that much, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Filming's actually more stressful, but yeah, I remember back in the day, there was the 5-star rating system. You had to get a certain number of subscribers to get the custom banner and custom thumbnails. The partner program was something that I was like going crazy to try to reach. And,
so were you making money in school then or no?
I would say by the end of high school, it was around what like the average citizen made. Comparative to everyone in the class, it was, at the end, people were like, wow, like that's crazy. But then the same people that made fun of it would be asking me for free stuff. Like, hey, you got some iPhone cases, you got a new phone for me or whatever it is.
I was thinking. Even if you were making something, that's more than what they were probably making, doing, you know, whatever. So it's interesting because my sister also, I made her start while she was in college, and she never really had a traditional job because I would always either have her help me film or do stuff and fly her out to LA while she was in college. And so her friends would always make fun of her. But like, she was still managing like a full-time YouTube career while going to college and making like decent money as well, which, you know, it's just weird because if people don't understand that, they also don't see how much work it is.
It's more than full-time.
Exactly. It's like talking to you as another creator, like you guys get it. And it's like, okay, you understand.
I left university to do this. Actually, I left in the first week of the fourth year, which most people think was crazy, but, it was just too much to try to do at the same time. And I didn't feel like I was learning much at business school, like all this other stuff that I had to try to learn and navigate as a business person trying to run everything on my own. I was learning more in what the business world is like today in the space that I actually like, as opposed to the traditional world. Like in marketing class, they would talk about business or the whole social media thing for like a corner slide out of the entire term. And YouTube wasn't even on that list. And we all know the influencer industry has been multiplying every single year, that I just felt like at that point it was just too much to manage. And the opportunity, I think, was sort of just might as well go for it now. You can go back to the degree anytime. I actually tried to go back last month, and I lasted 4 days on Zoom calls.
Oh my
gosh. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. It screwed up my whole schedule.
Well, it's just hard because I feel like there's so many different ways to learn. And that was like one of my huge inspirations this past year. We started this conference, which was going to be a real life in-person conference called Vlog University,
yeah.
where people could come and learn. It would just be like a crash course, just hang out, you know, learn as much as you can from knowledgeable people about everything from production to marketing to editing. And I feel like those are the kind of things that, you know, as creators or people looking to do this stuff need, because I mean, I'm not saying don't go to school because you can learn a lot. But for me, I went to a 2-year school, which was focused all on video production, editing, 3D, graphic yeah. design. So, I mean, I learned so much in those 2 years, made a lot of friends. And like, there's different alternatives to that, like sort of traditional, like 4-year school. So I think
online
I definitely highly, yeah,
Skillshare.
I highly encourage that kind of stuff. Like Skillshare is great. I mean, just YouTube, like if I need to learn anything, color grading, I found some really great YouTubers just looking for like color grading tips yeah. and things like that. So
yeah, I saw that Vlog just, University. I think one of my tutorials might've played in one of the, with motion VFX.
Cool.
Yeah. So Simon, or however you pronounce his name, he's like, do you mind if this video shows up there? So that looked really cool. And I know one of the other things I want to talk about was like Camera Camp. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it. I ended up giving Sebastian, who runs iSetups, my spot because I had a flight booked to LA actually that week, Sony Camera Camp. And what was like kind of the vision behind that? And I also heard a rumor that this is a product that came from a lot of the feedback from creators and YouTubers, specifically the ZV-1.
Yeah, I'm getting chills just like thinking about it, because like Camera Camp was exactly what like me and Jenna had envisioned.
Yeah.
Like we just wanted creators to come, have fun, have a safe place to just hang out and talk. Like we even did some panels that like the talk that like my sister and I did, I was like, everyone just like shut your phones off. This is off the record. Like this is a safe space. Just talk and be free to share like your struggles. And it was great because we all had the same struggles, or somebody else had something that we could help them with. And it was just so beautiful that I'm just so sad that we weren't able to do it again this year. Cause we did have it planned to do. And we also, it was the only time that we could do it was around iPhone season. So
yeah.
I know like, I was like a lot of my tech friends, there's no way they're going to be able to make it here because it's all
a lot
the
of people
iPhone
ship
stuff.
Their phones there. I think Sebastian told me, he was like, yeah, the UPS guy came by and just wondering all these iPhones getting dropped off at a camp.
It was a huge, just like massive amount of phones and watches all in the middle of Montana. But I mean, our vision, it was really fulfilled and yeah. everyone had such a great time. And it was just, I guess uplifting as well, just to kind of not have an event where you have to go and work. And it was just kind of like an adult camp that you can go film. And you know, the great part about this new camera is it was like everything that we had wanted. They had a bunch of sessions where we could give feedback and they really finally listened. And I'm just so excited to go out and finally vlog again when we're allowed to go outside.
It's like, yeah, I think it's cool that they listen to some features that we've never seen before on camera. And I think a lot of times, I think even like just sitting in the car with a friend, I was like, what if these companies just set up like one focus group meeting with even a few people in the tech industry in that room, and they'd be able to relay all the information that they've had from their audience of what people want to see. Cause it seems like a lot of people agree on some stuff, even though the internet on, especially in technology, people always love to disagree. Like for example, the product mode was also something that you don't really see.
So great.
And the autofocus is amazing on it. And you can hold, you know, like traditionally, I know like beauty influencers, you hold the product out and you always do this. And I always wondered why.
Yep.
Like, I use the manual focus and all that and setting exposure. So I thought that was a really cool function. And like the whole microphone thing, people were always like, what? These cameras can shoot 4K, 6K in some cases, and the microphones on it are still not great. So the microphone improvement was also a huge thing. And obviously flip out screen and how compact it is and how it's able
so
to
light.
Just, yeah, it's I was so surprised actually, because I know Sony is already known for making stuff that is very light, the A63, mm-hmm. A65, and traditionally we've had a heavier setup over the past few years. It's gotten heavier, unfortunately, but yeah, this is something that I'm going to take all everywhere when I don't usually vlog because I'm kind of awkward on camera, so but like just for filming,
you can
stuff,
edit it so you're not awkward.
Yeah, it's this is like the perfect product for a YouTuber, and I think that's like, it's cool that it just came out of a camp where everybody was just having fun and giving their natural opinions and being mm-hmm. able to test out gear.
And over the years, I've done so many of these product testing things where they ask for feedback and
yeah.
basically have just ignored you.
Like, oh, yeah, 100%.
I've done so many. And I'm like, well, I wasted my time because you just came out with the same exact thing that is not anything that anybody was wanting.
Yeah, we actually did one at VidCon a few years ago. I'm not going to mention the brand name, but they had a whole room of different creators. Everybody was like from a different space. And the general mm-hmm. consensus of the product was that it was not one that people really wanted to see, but they still made it anyways.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's where you really need to listen to the audience. Yeah. I think over the years with YouTube, I mean, that's one of the things I've done as well, is like, they are the ones watching, like, listen, like, they are there to help most of the time. And of course you'll have the trolls, but you know, sometimes the trolls actually have some good feedback. I'm like, okay, you're right. Maybe I was a little annoying in that video. So I'm sorry.
But even compared to like 2006, brands are now taking creators like ourselves much more seriously for feedback. Like back then it was like, we were just buying the stuff to like review and just make videos for the fun of it. And then now it's like companies are seriously taking input from the space. And like Apple has obviously worked with creators much more now. Back when I first started YouTube, I thought that a YouTuber being invited to an Apple event was like never going to happen. I thought it was like impossible when I was 12 or 13, whether it was like accurate opinion or not, I'm not really sure, but I think it's cool that brands are now dipping into the space for input on how to make products.
Yeah. And I think it's a trust issue too, because I've definitely seen a lot of creators who, you know, I don't want to say they're not trustworthy, but it's like, you have to earn that trust of a company and a brand and just, you know, continue to grow and be like, look, I've signed this NDA. I can keep this under wraps. And, you know, I think that's a huge trust for a lot of big brands to just essentially, I feel like people still look at us as like, oh, just these kids on YouTube. And I mean, to a bigger brand, that might be what it looks like, but they're trusting a lot of us with a lot of information. And I think,
tech's a great space to be in that space. Like, sure. I'm happy that the next question I sort of had was like, how do you, after so many years on YouTube, how do you continue to be excited about like creating new content, whether it's starting to do like cooking videos? In my case, I started doing like some travel films and integrated some fashion and also home videos, interior design and renovation and that kind of thing, while still being centralized around tech. And it's great that tech is in everyday lives and you could be diverse, whether it's in the kitchen, in the living room, or on travel, camera equipment. There's a lot of avenues to go, and cars as well. What has been like the key to still like loving the job this many years? Because no matter how fun it is, it's at some point it does get boring if you're still doing the same videos in day one.
For sure. I think allowing yourself to know when you're like, I'm having an off day, like I can't film. I know there's been times that I've had like my shooter and editor Tyler come over and I'll be like, we'll start to shoot. I'm like, I can't do this today. You know, it's just like, you have to really be in it. And I mean, sometimes I'll have to like force myself to like push through to do a video. But most of the time it's like, I want to be up and excited about whatever it is that I'm talking about. So it's like, let's just push this to another day. Yeah. Like, there's something else we can work on. Maybe we can organize some footage or something like that. So I think just allowing yourself to take those breaks is something in the past couple of years that I've finally allowed myself to have. And it's like, the whole world's not going to fall apart if I don't get this video out tomorrow. If I don't make that embargo time, like, it's fine. Like, we're going to be okay. But it's so hard to like let yourself kind of accept that.
Yeah. I'm still in the phase where I feel that pressure still to upload all the time, but it is like nonstop, like getting off the flight and you got to film the next morning. And there are some days where like the A-roll is just a one take and it's perfect. And then usually there's like a problem in our case, like the mic's not on or something's peaking. And then there's other days where the A-roll takes like an hour and a half and it's just like over and over and you keep trying to avoid it. So that's, it's crazy how many years. Like we are kind of in that first generation of people doing YouTube as a career. I've never had a real job. I used to try to apply to Best Buy, but I was 14, so I never got hired. Mm-hmm. And then YouTube started to, I even took like a food safe certification to go work at like A&W or McDonald's for fun during the summer. It's crazy that people always like a common interview question is like, where do you see it in 5 years or in 10 years? And I almost don't know what to answer, because in 1 or 2 years, stuff has changed so fast. And it's like we are still in that first generation. Like when everyone's like 70 or 80 in the current, like the creators today, when we're 70 and 80, are we still going to be making YouTube videos? That kind of thing. It's hard to say.
I love that you said like where you'll see yourself in 5 years. Cause anytime anybody asks me that question, I'm just like, I don't know.
And even 2 weeks is tough to say.
Exactly. I mean, this whole entire world has just changed over the past. I mean, the world did change overnight.
Yeah.
And like, just thinking about that, like you realize how fragile the system is, how fragile, you know, I mean, I think we've all realized how fragile life is, but like just to see it kind of fall apart around you is just like, oh my God, like it really does make you think like, what is important? What are we doing? And you know, like what ways can we kind of come together to try to help people? And
for sure.
And it's just like we're so lucky to be able to be in that position. And it's like I have so much old tech too that I've just kind of been like stockpiling to like give to people that that might need it. And I would love, this is like kind of like my goal, is to just like sort of find a way to help some of these underprivileged kids in schools who are now not able to go to school. Like they're not able to learn because they don't have the tools at home. So it's like, how do we kind of help them continue on? Because it's like without them going to schools, like some of them aren't getting food. They're not getting their lunches.
I heard like internet was a problem. Like in, I think there was a H3 interview with a teacher, and she was saying in her district alone, like most of the kids didn't have access to internet, and then they had to go around and provide the access points to be able to connect to Zoom and stuff. And those are things that like previously we would have never thought about, just because we've had it for the internet and everything, even such a basic thing. So I think, like this platform, and especially in the tech industry, we do have a lot of ability to try to provide. And one of the series that we've tried to do is setup makeover. So we usually just find a friend mm-hmm. who needs a new setup to work with, and we go in and we'll cover everything, buy them a new desk, paint the room, get them some new tech, and hopefully just use something that we enjoy to inspire like the productivity and the work from home sort of thing. The last question I have actually is just like, how has production kind of changed over the years? I remember you used to do like the Apple Store videos where you would use the webcam at the store. And I also saw your Mac Pro video where it was shot on a Red and it was like very well produced and all that. And now with like Teams and everything, it starts out like, I think a lot of us, at least in the 2010 to 2013 era, a lot of us used to use like smartphones, mm-hmm. webcams and all that. And nobody ever complained about quality. Whereas now tech is kind of like the leading edge in terms of YouTube industries for production quality. Like almost all of us shoot in 4K or use cameras that can shoot in 4K, whereas you might look at like vlogging, they're still using 1080p and 720. And even though like obviously content's the most important thing, how is like the production sort of thing and the workflow changed in the past in the years?
Yeah, I guess even over the past couple of months, I mean, I still do edit some of my videos. I'm so grateful though to have found Tyler who can also help shoot and edit. Yep. But we started using PostLab. Have you heard of that?
I haven't. It's heard of Frame.io and I've tried it, but haven't heard of PostLab yet.
So PostLab is pretty great. So if you guys are looking to like kind of work together and collab, like you can basically be editing remotely off of like the same Final Cut library. I mean, it has honestly changed absolutely everything. Even if Tyler is here editing in the same sort of house, like we still all use PostLab, and you basically can connect to a virtual library, download that library on your computer, and then edit that library, and then you can click upload, it'll upload it back to the cloud, and then it'll lock it so that you can't be in that library when someone else is editing, but you can open it to take a peek, so it'll open up a copy. So I can right now open up a library and see what like Jenna or Tyler is working on. But if you guys do a lot of remote editing, like I can't recommend it enough. Like it's incredible. So that has been super helpful. We shoot a lot with like all Sony. I would love to shoot with Red, but I also at some point I'm like, I know this footage is going to be too ridiculous.
It weighs 25 pounds, which is a bit of a problem. Usually really, so I used to want to go with the lightest setup. I had like the Panasonic GH5, I think, for a bit. And then we ended up switching to the Canon 1DX, which was not light either. And the file sizes were larger than what's on the Red, actually. So we got used to that setup. And then after we switched over to the Red, the reason why I like it is not because like we don't really use it for what it needs to be done, aside from like the Porsche video like that we did for fun. But we don't even have to think about the settings half the time. It's the 17 stops of dynamic range, just hit record, you can fix everything in post. And the past few hires I've had were just like friends, university, no production experience, which in the beginning I want to like rip my hair out. But but after, like same with like the Easy Rig, not knowing how to focus it, it's shaking like crazy, my viewers are complaining. But actually with this kind of camera, usually they just hit the record button, and then as long as it's in focus, if you teach them how to do the focus, the rest of the stuff just don't have to think about it anymore. Cause before it was
but after we shot those few videos on the Red, I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to go back.
It looked really good. Yeah. I remember that. And your editor graded it. You guys graded it very, very well. I'm not even that good at grading mine.
Actually, I edited that one. I think I added the Mac Pro one.
Yeah, the whole like workflow is completely different. Like the way we think about the camera is different. Because the Red workflow uses like the whole like log and then IPP2s mm-hmm. and then like the different contrast ratios and the tinting and everything. But yeah, I remember that video was really well produced.
Yeah, no, thank you. When we rented three Reds, I mean, that should have cost like a ridiculous amount of money. Yeah. But the rental house, they were nice enough to give us a nice discount because one of my friends works with them. And I was like, we have so much gear right here that I don't even know what to do with it. But it was just, it was great. It was really fun to kind of do a bigger production. Because it's usually, we just focus on like, okay, this is what we have. How quick can we get this done and make it look pretty good? So, which is, that's kind of like the YouTube way. Cause it's like, we don't have time to waste. As soon as you're done with one video, you got to go and do another one.
100%. Yeah. That was one of the issues we had with the travel films. Like the editor would work on that one for 2 weeks and he like crafted like an amazing video and he was like very proud of it. But then because we spent 2 weeks making that video, we all of a sudden got to catch up for the 2 weeks before we leave for another week. So there was never that time to sit back and appreciate that video because within 5 minutes of that going up, and or while it was uploading, we already had to catch up on the tech videos. So that's kind of the hurdle between like tech industry where there's always stuff coming out, but there's also the advantage. There's always stuff to review because there's like,
it's true.
Nowadays companies are releasing stuff faster than ever before. It used to be like every year, year and a half. Now some companies like Oppo are making four or five phones of the same model a year.
I mean, I've even had to turn down. I'm like, I can't cover another one of these phones because it's just too much. And it's like with the small upgrades, it's like, I feel like my audience is very tech focused, but a lot of them are just kind of like more general consumers as well, where they don't really care as much about like every single thing. So it's just like, tell us what we should get and show us what it does, which is kind of fun. Cause I can also always weave in the vlogging aspect of that, which I used to love so much.
And how does your audience like the cooking videos and kind of like the vlog style?
They miss the cooking videos so much. I've only done like a few, but like I used to do the cooking videos to fill in the blanks whenever there wasn't much tech, but now there's been so much tech. And like the cooking videos take so much time and I make such a mess that
it took 5 hours to make a coffee in our video coming up.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I don't know. It's just, I kind of go back to just, I want to make stuff that's fun and, you know, it's just enjoy it because in the end, it's like, we're still making this content. And if it's not fun, like it's going to show through in the videos.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I noticed my audience, like their base is tech and consumer tech. They don't really like the whole like deep dive and really explain stuff. And they like the home type of videos, which is kind of the new niche that we had to find. Cause like one conflict was I used to only make tech videos. So most of this audience comes from tech and the new audience is coming from the home videos or the desk setup tours and they want to see that. So there's always that like occasional comment that's like, stop making these fashion videos. But then I'm like, the numbers on the fashion videos are better than the tech videos just because there's so many people doing tech videos and a lot of people are better than me at making the dedicated tech videos. And then the other trouble is like, usually we're like, okay, let's fill in the gap with some home videos because we've done too many tech. Next thing you know, you got 5 home videos and 0 tech videos. And then you got 5 tech videos coming up and the tech videos have to go out right away and the home videos can wait. And it's been sitting in the timeline, the cooking video or the lifestyle. I only do lifestyle cooking videos because I'm not a good cook at all. I just want to film like the whole like process of it. It takes like 7 hours, makes a huge mess, lights everywhere and stuff like that. But those ones end up sitting on the timeline for 3 months because all of a sudden you have some tech to cover. And last week with WWDC, we thought that there was going to be a few products, potentially Apple TV, potentially iPads, an iMac. And then now we're like pivoting and like the software stuff's been covered back to some home. There's always something exciting to cover in this space, I think. And adding like the vlog style is cool.
What I was saying, it's good to have those cooking videos because they're usually not very timely. Whereas I still have cooking videos from probably 2 or 3 years ago that I've never posted that were just like a backup video. And then I think I posted one recently. It was like the beginning of quarantine that I had an old Apple Watch on because I shot it back when I had an old Apple Watch. And everyone's like, this video is a lie. You shot this so long ago. Look at that old Apple Watch. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are a little too tech savvy.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. I don't want to go over time here, but thanks so much. And we'll be uploading this in the next couple of weeks. And
awesome.
Yeah, just a backlog of edits all the time. So that pretty much wraps it up for this episode of the Feature Podcast. And a huge thanks to Justine for coming on and giving us the time and talking about some of the Apple developments, Camera Camp, and also YouTube. We're definitely planning to do kind of a regular update of the tech industry and some of the products that come out and my opinions on it. So stay tuned for that, but I'll see you guys in the next episode.